Please welcome Dr. Tammy Summers.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's truly a pleasure. And I just want to start, as I've done with a lot of my interviews this year, how are you doing?
You know what, Troy, I appreciate starting with that question, you know, because my background is special education. I started out as a special ed teacher, so I am very focused on self-care. I have a therapeutic background in supporting counseling and those kinds of things. So I appreciate you asking that question because it is rough to, you know, continue forward sometimes when you feel very discouraged. So I'm grateful. I'm thankful. I am holding up well. I have an amazing team of people that I obviously work with at Gateway, but I also have an amazing family who supports me and knows I'm passionate about our work in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I'm grateful that, you know, I'm able to get up every day and still continue on with the fight and having these great conversations with people. So thank you so much, because it's okay to say we're not okay. That's what I've been having as one of my Zoom backgrounds, that it is okay for all of us to say that we're not okay sometimes.
Yeah, and especially, I'm African-American, and especially in our tradition, sometimes that hasn't always been welcome, right? To say that we need help. We need to say that we're not okay. Yes. And I think that we're seeing that change now, and I'm happy about that.
Yes, I would certainly agree with you as a, you know, African-American woman myself. We know in the mental health area that people of color tend to not lean towards getting the mental health assistance that they need. But I would like to say, I'm happy to say that, you know, I do see that changing, that there is a shift. And then we're all discussing how important counseling and therapy and self-care really is for all of us.
Yeah, and I want to get to the work of your office in a moment, but you just triggered this great thought. Like, what are some of the ways that you are practicing self-care?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I'd love to share. Also an awesome question. So one thing that I can share for sure that I do every week at Gateway is I have mindfulness meditation. I'm a big meditation supporter. And I know that our other support counselor, Nicole, also at Gateway does counseling or does meditation. I believe she's on Wednesday and I'm on Tuesday. And so I do meditation. I use the Calm app. I use various apps that are free also. But you can find different books that also help you lead yourself through meditation. I do Zumba. I exercise every other day. When it was warm outside, I would walk in my neighborhood just to take in the air and nature. And so I do those kinds of things. Exercise is important to me in keeping my body well, but also I do meditation, those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's so crucial to really take that time, because it's not selfish to do that.
No.
I think a lot of people think, oh, I got to take. No, like if you're, I heard a Jan Levan Zant say this years ago that if your cup doesn't runneth over, that means you're empty, right? So it has to runneth over and let other people get what comes from the rest of it. So I think that's so important.
And we got to be creative, you know, mm-hmm. We do, you know, Zoom kinds of hangouts with friends or family and that kind of thing. You know, if it's something late in the day or a midday coffee, you know, conversation or something like that with your colleagues or with friends, that's very important.
That is so important. And so let's talk about the work that you do. Let's set the stage for someone who's never heard of your kind of work before. Mm-hmm. What's the main mission of your work?
So our main mission really focuses on having that collective kind of spirit regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so at Gateway, we've always had a history of having some kind of diversity work, multicultural work going on at our college. That's always been a part of our mission in some kind of way. But more recently, our institution and our president, Dr. Brian Albrecht, took that next level step to say, you know what, we have done some things, but we want to take more action and be more intentional. And focused on not only our student success and equity gaps, but also retention of employees and how important that is at our college and making sure we're diverse in that way. And that we are reflecting diversity in a way of perspectives and ideas and people from all backgrounds that also reflect the student population and the community that we serve. So that's very important. And so my whole office really is focused on, are we giving people what they need when it comes to equity? and everybody might need something a little different. When it comes to diversity, are we embracing all ways of thought, background, people who come from different groups? And then inclusiveness, are we promoting inclusiveness and inviting people to the table? And that really is my mission, to get out to our Gateway community, faculty, staff, and students, that everyone is welcome to the table to have these conversations about diversity and race and poverty and those who are economically disadvantaged or those who are struggling with food insecurities and homelessness, that everyone must come to the table for us to come up with solutions, not just my office and certainly not just me.
That is so true. I want to touch on something you said in that. And I know that I grew up in an education system that taught the theory of the melting pot, that we all just kind of go in, we blend together, and it's just that's America. And you said something that really I think rings true, is that everyone needs something different. And that's okay, right? Mm-hmm. There's different communities that need different things. I want to go back to the moment when you saw the shooting of Jacob Blake, because you assumed this role in the thick of this, right in the summer, after the unfortunate death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and then a little bit before the Jacob Blake. So how did coming into this role with all of that change how you went about doing it?
I don't know if it necessarily changed my approach, because I think I've always had an approach of inclusiveness. Like I said, my background as a special education teacher, working with students who had learning disabilities and cognitive disabilities and emotional behavior challenges. I've always been in the school of thought of holding people accountable, but also giving people a chance and giving people the ability to be able to thrive given their additional needs that they may have. So for me, coming into the situation, I used the same approach that I always do, to say, you know, let's come to the table and have a conversation about Jacob Blake and what happened and what we saw or what we didn't see and how we're responding to that emotionally, or with Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and these situations in our local community or even across the United States, sadly. People of color being harmed in this kind of way and these kinds of things happening are not new. Are they probably more publicized now? Are they getting more movement and conversation? Yes, which is good, because I really don't think that we can make any true change if we aren't being honest with ourselves and having dialogue and conversation to say, we really are going to be intentional about, we need to make some changes, that we cannot continue this way as citizens. And so for me, I still continued with that message, and I do today. You know, to say we have to come to the table, we have to have these crucial conversations, we have to lean in. And I know that it's uncomfortable, you know, for people of all backgrounds, Black, white, or whatever, to have these conversations. But if we don't, we aren't going to get to what the real experience is. And all of us, again, going back to equity, have our own lived experience that we work from. Our perspective, our unconscious biases that we come to the table with. And so you have to check those, but you have to start with recognizing that you have them and that they exist. And then from there, say, you know what, Tammy, I didn't realize that that was how you have to walk through the world compared to myself as a Latino woman or a white woman or, you know, an Asian woman, and how they have to walk through the world. We all have our own lived experience. And so for me, even in the thick of all of that, even being blessed with this opportunity from our president to be the first VP of DEI at our college, I still took the same approach that I think our colleagues would say, you know, that's the way that Tammy would go, is to say, let's jump right in. Let's have a true conversation. Let's not push away from the table and say, I don't want to talk about this. And I know that's not easy for everyone. So I feel blessed that, you know, I've been given a talent where I don't get frazzled by us having those hard conversations, I guess.
You said that this is that the unfortunate harming of Black people is not new. I was born in 1992, which was the year of the Rodney King incident, which yes. I learned about subsequently.
Yes. There you go.
Of course, afterwards, right? So this has been going on for my entire life. So you mentioned that you're yes. not afraid to have those hard conversations. And mm-hmm. I think that would be difficult about having, especially people in my generation, millennial and younger Gen Z, when we are just bombarded with mm-hmm. messages and told to bombard other people with mm-hmm. messages about mm-hmm. ourselves and mm-hmm. all the time, right? Whether it's mm-hmm. Instagram or TikTok or Snap. So have you seen generational differences in how you have to start those conversations, house those conversations?
I think there are generational differences in what groups of people want to have the conversations and which ones lean into them. But as far as how you have them, I don't think I adjust me personally, my approach. Everyone needs to lean into them, no matter if you're a millennial or Generation Y or X or the next generation from our baby boomers. And I think there's just a different spectrum and level of comfort amongst all of those groups from baby boomers on how they want to have those conversations or avoid them. Where our younger generations and the generation you come from, Troy, are much more apt and open to let's have this conversation and let's, you know, be bold about it. Where others are like, you know, I was taught more, you don't discuss that, let's not go there. If I ignore, it will go away. But clearly it hasn't, because we can go back again, like I said, in history, you mentioned Rodney King, but we can go back to the Emmett Till days of when, you know, men of color have been beaten for things that have been said that were along racial lines. So we have a long history in this country of these kinds of issues, but I think every generation's approach to not dive right into having those conversations is a little bit different. But I think what we have to do is continue to lean into those. We cannot back away, you know, and right now we have a momentum in 2020 to say, you know what, let's continue to have these conversations. Let's talk about what is really happening, you know, to certain groups of people at a larger scale. That's what it's really about. You know, not saying that everyone isn't experiencing some kind of tragedy, but why does this continue to happen with certain groups of people in our society? And those conversations are very real, and we need to, you know, continue to have them. And then after we're doing the talk, we need to take that next step and do some walking into some actual action. We can't keep talking. Can't continue to talk. We have to take some next steps. Actually, myself and our president, Dr. Brian Albrecht, I just shared a book with him. I'm looking at the book now, From Equity Talk to Equity Walk, Expanding a Practitioner's Knowledge for Racial Justice in Higher Education. So he and I are going to be reading this book, and we've ordered it for other leaders in our college as well. You know, that after you do have those crucial conversations and you lean in and you kind of marinate in, you know, those difficult conversations with people of all generations, you know, you let it kind of sit there and bake for a little bit. And then you say, okay, so now what? What do you think as a Generation X? What do you think we should do for your generation in having these conversations, but taking the next step? And then for our baby boomers and for, you know, the Generation Y and Z and everyone else, the same question to them. Now you have heard this information. You are now conscious, you're aware. So now what are the next steps that we do to really do active change and be change agents and make some real change in our communities, in our society, that we don't continue in these patterns? Because that's the pathology that we have right now. If we ignore, then for a little while, it doesn't happen. And then boom, it happens again. And everyone's all about having the conversation. The young people, you know, people who are Generation Y or older. And then what action are we taking? So we have to be conscious of what are those next steps. But once your conscience is raised, you know, as human beings, we want to assume that everybody will want to take that next step. But that's hard for people. That's hard for people.
And I think that that challenge would be especially hard because Gateway has a much different student base than other institutions, right? It's a multi-generational base. I mean, one of my dearest friends when I was at Gateway, when I was in the marketing program, was someone who was in their 70s, who we'd go to the cafeteria, we'd get a muffin every day, a white man in his 70s, and we just became great friends throughout that program. So does that present a set of challenges, or is that a good thing because you have all these different generations kind of cohabitating and having to work together?
Right. I think it's an amazing thing. I think it works to our benefit that we're able to, you know, mix and mingle and have these conversations and challenge one another. You know, you're able to then say to your friend, you know, what do you think about this? This is my lived experience as a Black male, you know, going through society compared to him as a white male in his 70s, and having true dialogue, because you could do that because you respect each other. Your relationship didn't start on that basis. You know, you respect each other because you were friends from being in the marketing program. So now we can have this different dialogue, and you can hear about my lived experience and I can hear about yours. And then from there, you know, really start to brainstorm what can we do to make some changes in our local community and our society in general.
I had Brandon Poehler on the show, for those who listened, a few weeks ago, and he's 19 years old, a member of Generation Z. And he said, I asked, like, what are some of the things that, you know, young people in your generation are doing to kind of determine what they're going to, where they're going to go to college, where they're going to spend the next 4 years or 2 years of their lives. And he said, I know that I look at, and I know a lot of my friends look at, how safe is the campus? How inclusive is the campus? There's a, not only is it a retention, it's a recruiting tool when students see that the facility is open. And he was a student at Carthage who was pushing Carthage to do more for LGBTQ individuals. And I just thought, wow, that is so fascinating that here are young people saying, like, no, like, I want to have a safe, inclusive environment. And that's even before I get there, right? Like, that's a, if it doesn't have that, it's a non-starter.
Yes, I would totally agree. You know, if our LGBTQ plus student population, potential students, as well as those who are presently here, don't see activities that are geared towards them, clubs, events, our safe zone training, you know, then who wouldn't want to pause as a human being to say, am I going to be welcome? Will I be embraced? Can I be my authentic self? You know, when it comes to going to school at here at Gateway. And we want everyone to have the opportunity to be their authentic selves. That's what's most important. That's where they'll learn the best way, you know, when they can say, I can be comfortable, I can be me, and I can get through this marketing program and be successful.
Yeah, I came out earlier this summer, which is years after I went to Gateway, as a member of, I'm gay, and I remember at Gateway, when I was there even, there was another gay individual who I later learned to be gay, who was dancing in the hallways, just doing like a Beyonce dance routine. And no one did anything. And I was thinking, gosh, I wish I could be that open. And it had nothing to do with Gateway. It was just me. I wasn't ready yet. And I was thinking, wow, what an environment. I mean, he's just breaking down single ladies right here in the
the hallway. Could have had us all join in.
So I want to continue on.
We definitely have made progress in that area. Last year, you know, we had our first big drag show fundraiser. It was amazing. You know, and I felt like our students really embraced and supported that. The performance was awesome. And this past year for Hispanic Heritage Month, we had a drag performer who virtually did like a whole makeup demonstration for us and showing how he transforms himself in his makeup and hair and everything. And so as an institution, when it comes to our LGBTQ plus student population and employees, I really feel like we are making good strides in that area for everyone to feel like they can work or go to school at our institution and be their authentic selves.
I will say, when I saw the posters go up for the drag show, I said, whoa, like, this is this is great. Like, in support, I was so happy. Like, that is a big step. And I think Brian, I believe from the photos I saw, that I was not able to make it, but it was just fascinating. So I want to move on to the wheels of higher ed, right? Yes. Just like the wheels of government, mm-hmm. tend to move slowly. Mm-hmm. And in our generation, millennial Gen Z, we've had instant gratification for most of our lives. We can just do whatever we want, especially in the social media digital realm. So how do you balance the kind of impatience potentially of younger people with the kind of grind work that you have to do in higher ed?
Yes. I think you use that energy. You don't let that go. You know, you use that energy to be creative, to come up with programming that can be for the right now. So if it was the drag show or it was some other programming, you know, you use that energy to build on that momentum. You know, I have some white students right now who are interested in starting a club that is, you know, a white allyship kind of club, and what they can do as white students with staff who understand that we need to work together to also make sure that everyone has a fair shot and chance in our society. And so even though they would want to get started right now with that white allyship club and spreading the message on how to be a white ally and what that means, you know, we have to, you know, certainly be thoughtful about that, because in our community, in our gateway community, our local communities that we serve, that will be a new concept, just like having the drag show was a new concept. And not that everyone was on board or happy about it. We did have some protesters that came down to our Racine campus during that event. But I'm cognizant of taking those strategic steps. You know, Gateway is a strength-based college, and one of my top five strengths is strategic. And so I'm very thoughtful about the approach. Not that we're going to pause, and not that we're going to avoid and not do it, but how we take those steps, how we educate people on the why in our campus community is very important. And so building on that young person's energy and passion, I think I take that, use that for the benefit of getting them involved right away, and then continue having them help spread the message of us wanting to be an equity-minded kind of campus community and a cultural community that is conscious of differences in everyone and what we all need.
And I want to touch on this for a brief second, and we're winding down here. We have a few minutes left. But you mentioned pushback, the protesters, and I'll say it because, I mean, I don't care. But some people have had a hard time bringing more voices to the table, particularly Black or LGBTQ, trans voices to the table, right?
Sure.
And the fear that it takes away from their own perceived stature. Talk about some of the pushback you've received and how you kind of, because of course in your work, your job is to listen to that pushback and figure out a way to bring them to the table. So how do you do that?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because we literally, myself and several other leaders in the college just a week ago, had that conversation about how do we engage those people who are having some discomfort or upset about the work that we're doing, if it's related to diversity or LGBTQ or whatever it may be, how do we get them to the table? I would first say, you know, I want to give kudos to, again, our president of our college, Dr. Brian Albrecht, to say he, you know, responds, he embraces, if it's that it's hard to do when people send anonymous letters or emails or anonymous blogs or whatever to complain. So that's a challenge. However, when he does get something directly from people, he does respond and he will engage in conversation. But I have to say he always, and I feel like our other senior leaders in the college do the same thing, invite the people to the table. We can't hear your voice or your perspective if you aren't coming to the table to have a conversation with me, with our Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Steering Committee. We have a steering committee that is leading all of these efforts throughout the college. And so our leaders have to model really asking people to come to the table. And we can't do anything if you aren't at the table for us to have a dialogue and conversation and respectful dialogue, not necessarily living and bathing in anger and being defensive. You have to be open. You know, you have to be willing to listen and hear other perspectives, just like we're inviting other people to come and have the conversation that they may disagree with the direction the college is going, or that we are embracing this, our diversity, equity, inclusion programming in a different way, but inviting them to the table. And so I do feel very proud about our president and our senior leaders in encouraging people, but we really are truly trying to brainstorm how can we get people to the table who may disagree or have a different way of thinking. We haven't totally figured that out yet, but we are definitely having those conversations. And, you know, I encourage people. It doesn't help when you sit in the back wings and send things that are anonymous. If it's to me or to Brian or to our board, we can't make any movement on having a good conversation if you don't come to the table so that we can hear your views and your opinions and thoughts. And it certainly is not, I will say this for sure, Troy, it's certainly not going to shut us down or oppress or make us stop our activities, because as I mentioned earlier, embracing diversity, equity, and inclusiveness is what is going to continue and sustain our institution. Because if people don't feel welcomed, and again, that's people of all backgrounds, don't feel welcome, then they aren't going to want to stay at our institution for their academic journey or for employment. So we're not going to stop the conversation by getting, messages that are negative. We just need to use those to say, okay, what is this really about? And how can we support this person? They clearly equitably need some support as well in understanding the why. Why are we going this way? Our vision says we make life-changing educational opportunities a reality. We need to do that for our diverse community, and that means serving everyone.
Mm. That is so powerful. I want to touch on this, and if you don't feel comfortable, that's cool. But I can only imagine, I mean, I've been on the air for a long time and I've had snarky comments, you know, about shows I've done and, you know, whatever, but I can't even imagine the time it takes to write a letter or an email that's mm-hmm. long and mm-hmm. send it your way.
Yes. Yes.
Because I think too, like, if people know how you feel when you receive that, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I think it's hard to do that, right? To feel that kind of hatred, to be able to send that. So what does it feel like on your end to receive that?
For me personally, I definitely feel like when those things come, that there's something else going on. Like I said, my background in history is steeped in me being a special ed teacher and connecting with people as far as emotionally what's going on here, what's the thought process. So I'm always looking deeper to say what else is going on here, what is prompting this, you know, feeling. And again, I recognize that not everyone may be on board. Maybe everyone doesn't understand the why. Totally understand. I totally get that. However, I also want to keep myself in check to not take it personal. Can't take it personal towards me as an individual, to make sure that I'm keeping myself in check in that kind of way, because I feel like the work that I'm being called to do is important, impactful, and that it will make a huge difference in our college's sustainability and moving forward. And so, yes, does it sting for a little bit? Sure, it would for all of us. Would we question, okay, did we make a misstep here or should we have done something different there? Absolutely. I'm all about that. I'm all about collaborating, but I'm also all about let's have this conversation. And when you send messages anonymously or you send them in a way where we can't then have a follow-up conversation, it's not helping any efforts. It's certainly not going to oppress or stop us from our diversity work. But it's not helping us to say, okay, what's the real issue here? Tell me, you know, what's really going on and how can I support you? As far as if it's building a comfort and understanding on why we're doing our diversity work, or if there's something else that is going on that my office can support you. It's okay. We're not going to change minds of everybody in every community and culture and background, but we need to keep working with the majority of us that are on board in really making true transformational change when it comes to culture and diversity and equity and inclusion in our communities.
So, final question here for you.
Sure.
As the semester comes to a close.
Yes.
COVID-19, all of the things yes. I mentioned at the top. What are your biggest takeaways? And then what is your biggest wish for 2021?
So biggest takeaway, I would say right now that I feel like individually and all the people I work with and community, family, that we are a lot more resilient than we thought we were. You know, and that we can accomplish things in different ways that we never imagined. I've had that conversation with lots of students and staff who would have thought, I don't know, I would have never imagined that we would move this whole college virtually and do this and have virtual tutoring and adjust and move this whole Titanic of a ship, you know, and keep it afloat in this instance, in this way. And so my takeaway is we are a lot more resilient and stronger than we know. And we definitely are stronger together than we are apart.